All right. It is 28 seconds after the hour of 12, and this, the month of June? Yes, June. In the year of our Lord, 2006, thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming by. It's the Rick Emerson radio program here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Let me give you the phone numbers. It's 503-733-2970. If you'd like to be part of us electronically, you can do that as well. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. All right, so I hold... Well, this isn't it. I hold in my hands a William Shatner story. That's not really... Figuratively speaking, I hold in my hands, ladies and gentlemen, a fantastic piece of news. It really is... I have to tell you right now, just in the next 36 hours... I mean, the normally rapid-fire pace of this program is going to increase tenfold, because here's what I got right here. I have in my hands a piece of paper, which is not, but which could very easily be a huge announcement about the direction, the exciting new direction of AM 970. We will make that announcement in today's program. It's not going to be one of those things we talk about and never get to. We will get to this today. I have to. I have to get to this today, because there's going to be no time to get to it tomorrow, because tomorrow we have a huge announcement. Today's announcement is great. In any other world, in any other week, in any other time, in any other 36-hour period, the announcement I have today would typically be considered huge. But now, relative to the announcement tomorrow, today's announcement is it is less huge.
Huh?
It's big. Tomorrow, though, huge announcement. Also tomorrow, Stephanie Miller will be joining us on the program. What else is happening? There's something else that's happening tomorrow. Well, it doesn't matter. But right here, I have a big announcement. We will get to that today. An announcement about the direction of this very fine radio station, AM 970 Solid State Radio. Also today, a Geek Watch just handed to me moments ago. And it's a Geek Watch. Some of you have been waiting, I would say, upwards of 2 or 3 years for this news. So we will get to the Geek Watch today. What else? We have exciting Corey Haim news today. What other watches do we have today? We have Rick Emerson's Democracy on the March. That's coming up.
A Geek Watch.
What else?
Laura Bush walks out.
We have confirmation, apparently, on the Laura Bush story. We have Jen Lane from Barfly Magazine is going to be later. Here later. We have a song about girls who cut themselves. We have Lisa Goddard is going to be here from CNN Radio, which is all kinds of awkward already. And it's like she's not even on the phone yet. And I'm getting like... I'm getting a nervous flop sweat kind of developing. Because yesterday, I don't know what the deal was with yesterday's program. It was, as Quint says in Jaws, he's either very smart or very dumb. Yesterday's program was sort of like one of those half-remembered fever dreams. You're not entire, everything's a little bit blurry and fuzzy around the edges, like an old sepia-toned miscovered photograph from the 1920s. And you're not entirely sure what happened. So... I know that there was this long conversation with Lisa Goddard from CNN. And I know there was this longer, more awkward conversation with several other CNN anchors about Lisa Goddard. And any pictures that might exist of her in a Catholic schoolgirl outfit wearing a mathlete shirt. And then whether or not she ever talked about me in the conference rooms in Atlanta.
That's just embarrassing to even hear you repeat.
It's all very oogie. Well, we'll talk about that today. Also, Ed McCarthy, for reasons unknown to anyone, will be talking about the World Cup. An event that no one here cares about.
The World Cup of what?
I don't know.
The World Cup of sugar?
The World Cup, it's the World Cup of sitting around and trying to be gripped by the fantastic excitement of a 1-1 tie. After 4 hours. And then trying to get to your car without being gang raped. That's it. That's what it's the World Cup of. Surviving the trip home without being set on fire by a victorious team of Peruvians. What else? Well, that's it. I can tease other things, but what's the point, really? It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon, who's here today.
Hello.
You're looking fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
You're dressed a little, it's like kind of an upscale Sarah Dillon today.
Yeah, I'm all this sleep. I'm like actually, you know, feeling refreshed and not wanting to wear the same, you know, wife beater and cut off jeans.
You're not just rolling out and doing the truffle test on the floor to I can wear that for another day.
It's true.
Where were you? Because you were out late last night. And here's how I know. Because I was, like, it was once a year when I didn't see my shadow and I decided to go out for the evening. And then I called you because you... We're now, Sarah and I have what might be described as a very peculiar relationship, where I get the feeling that I substitute as a pinch brother for you.
Or father.
And then, thank you. And then...
I mean brother.
Put
the
boot in. Thank you. And then, you know, you called me dad last night, right?
I know. No, I'd only had like a drink or two. No, because you're like, okay, Sarah, I'm going to go do this. Are you going to stay there?
I wasn't.
Talk to me like that. I'm like, yes, Rick. Okay, Rick.
All right.
Bye, Dad.
Thank you. So, but then you in turn function as a sort of like pinch, not girlfriend. That's not even the right word. I don't even know what it is. I take you with me places so the people don't try to talk to me. That's kind of what it, you're just sort of a social Teflon. You know what I mean? Because people come over there. The average person, given the choice of talking to me or you, is always going to choose you, of course.
Maybe I'm your bodyguard.
That's totally what it. Well, you are. You know what you are? You're the sort of. Like in Harry Potter, you are the Patronus that I shoot out of my wand. No, you know what
that
I'm talking about.
Wrong.
No, it's like where the, you know, where it's like I'll go out and...
I don't want to be your Patronus.
And I don't want to engage in conversations with people because I'm not social in any way. And people try to talk to me and they expect me to be interesting and entertaining and I'm none of those things.
It is always amusing to me when you venture out on your own without me.
And then it gets...
And then I hear the stories.
Say something wild and crazy and I don't know. And then I just run away and then I go to the bathroom and duck out that side door and run to my car and
you
go home.
You always do, too. If you don't see Rick for 5 minutes, he's run back to his car and run home.
I gotta go over to the bar and get myself a...
Tim, too.
Totally. That's Tim, too. Tim doesn't even make any excuses. It's Tim, you just look away.
And I've learned to do it with public transportation.
And just... Tim is just totally just like his Romulan cloaking device is... Zing, and he's just gone.
Time has elapsed.
So I take Sarah with me because people come over to talk to me. Hey, Rick. And I go, yeah, look at Sarah. And then they just talk to you and then I can escape unnoticed into the night.
No, because then we get to have our jovial banter. I'm like, oh, yeah, Rick's so uncomfortable in social situations.
He's a leper. Anyway, so I called you to go out. Well, we'll talk about it later. But you were already out somewhere last night.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I couldn't stay out late. I was so gung-ho to stay out late and I was in bed by 11.
Welcome
again.
To being old.
I know.
That's a whole night we wake up. Tonight, I'm gonna stay up late and I'm gonna drink and I'm gonna.
I know, and I recruited a bunch of friends too because I said I was gonna be up late. Left them at the bar.
No, it's not gonna happen.
Sorry, guys.
Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, you can tell Carl Orb is back at work again. You know why? He posted the famous "They found WMDs in Iraq" back on the Fox News site, so everyone's just reading it like it's brand new.
The best part of it is they found W. Correct me if I'm wrong. If we're talking about the same story, and I suspect that we are,
yes, we are,
because we are now. It is now Karl Rove's world. All talking points everywhere come from him. He is the architect. These are now WMDs that they found in 2003.
Yeah.
All right. So they found
the
WMDs once. Somewhere. Years ago. All right.
It's the greatest.
Thank you. What else?
The Senate votes against John Kerry's plan to withdraw troops. The Senate says it's wrong, as it is, for the Iraqis to give amnesties to those who try to kill Americans, but that's what they've been doing.
All right. Lisa Goddard coming up later on. Ed McCarthy. We've got a double. I hold here the second half, so we have a double Geek Watch coming up today. And we will get to today's top five. We have the top five today as picked by Scotty J, taking his life in his hands. He's assembled the top five summer songs of all time. We'll get to that, and yes, we'll talk about the goddamn... Here's the thing with the mystery noise.
Oh, no.
I don't want to talk about it either.
I got accosted about the mystery noise last night, too.
I don't even... It's just become this millstone. It's like I can come in every day and like Sisyphus. I'm lugging it behind me, headed for the... This is a completely true story. This is not a kooky DJ anecdote. So I go into Dante's last night, and it's... And, you know, I do that Nick Twisp sort of thing. I kind of just dress for invisibility. You know what I mean? I don't go out. I don't try to call attention to myself. And it's not because... I mean, I am antisocial, but it's not that I don't want to talk to people as such. It's not like I'm trying to be jerky. It's trying to be like an a-hole or something.
No, in fact, you talk too much sometimes.
Thank you. I just don't function well around people sometimes. And I just, you know, so I'll just kind of go in and, like, slink into a corner. So I'm there at Dante's last night, just kind of minding my own business, doing nothing. And Davey Nipples from Storm in the Balls. Because it was their last Dante show last night for the summer. And so he comes over. So he and I are talking, and I get the guy tapping me on the back of the shoulder. Turn around, some guy, some listener, haven't met him before, seems like a nice guy. And he's like, no hello, no how are you, no what brings you out of your shell on this Wednesday evening. Taps me in the shoulder, I turn around, and I'm like, hey. And he's like, is it a gumball machine? I'm just, no, it's not a... And I, like, 30 seconds later, I find it like, oh, I got to look at the time. And so I, like, run over to the other side of the bar, go over to the other side of the bar. Big guy named Tom. Tom, for the 500th time, everyone, it is not a ruler on the edge of a desk. Nor has it ever been that, nor shall it ever be that. Try to go up to the front of the stage. Guy named Dex. Dex thinks it's, what is the other most common guess? Little springy flippy thing at the bottom of the door. It is none of those things. So we're going to have to do, and maybe we'll do it later on today.
I got a new one last night, too. Somebody thought it was a bendy straw.
Oh, with like where you're stretching it and then pulling apart?
Uh-huh.
Good guess. Totally wrong. Never guess it again. So these are what we call things that are incorrect. Things that should never again be guessed. People on hold 45 minutes. Is it a ruler? It's not a goddamn ruler. So later on, we may have to do like a comprehensive list of things it ain't. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your personal savior at the City Desk. It's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour. And now, from the City Desk, Tim Riley.
From higher town, the bottom of the coin tower, downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News Beat. Tim Riley reporting. Okay, let's begin with Democracy on the Mark.
Democracy on the March.
Okay, we have a lot of this today. First off, seven Marines and a sailor were charged with murder yesterday in the alleged planned killing of a disabled Iraqi civilian whose shooting death was staged to look like a foiled roadside bombing. In a separate case, a fourth soldier from the Army's 101st Division was charged with premeditated murder in the shooting deaths of three prisoners north of Baghdad. The new case brings to 12 the number of servicemen facing the death penalty for actions on the battlefield.
I don't understand what need there is to kill. Really, I don't understand how long you can live as a disabled person in Iraq anyway. Syria, it seems like you're very near the bottom of the evolutionary ladder and food chain there. Do you know what I mean? I'm just saying that really is, I'm not trying to be crude about it.
I wouldn't
just
want to park in a handicapped space there anyway. Somebody's put a bomb in the bottom of your car.
I do not mean to be morbid with these observations. That is incidental, as Hannibal Lecter would say. My only point here is it does seem like a country where social services are perhaps lacking in any sort of administrative infrastructure. So I don't really understand. How old was the... Do we know how old the disabled Iraqi was?
No, we don't have
presumably
that,
no. An adult. Mm-hmm. I'm just... It seems like being disabled, being a woman, being any... Unless you literally are a guy inside an iron room holding a rocket launcher, it seems like that's a whole lot of thinning of the herd going on over there. You know, you see that wounded gazelle lagging behind the others, and you know that it's like 5-10 minutes before he's going to be in a lion's lower intestine? So it seems to me if you're some guy motoring around having to use a stick in your teeth to type.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Army, aiming to make its recruitment goals amid the war, raised its maximum enlisting age to 42. They already boosted once this year from 35 to 40, but there were no takers. Now, everyone over 42 who registers for the Army will receive free downloads of the Glenn Miller Orchestra for their iPod. Oh, look, we found WMDs in Iraq. That's a big story on Fox News. Gee, I wonder who put this story there. Any ideas?
All I heard this morning was the word Santorum, and it's like your brain sort of... You know what it is? With the news, and I don't think it's because I work in the media, I think other people, everybody sort of in our news-saturated world, I believe, everybody has developed this skill. It is sort of like in your inbox, when you can set up rules and filters and things just get routed to the appropriate folder depending on what's in the subject line. You know, anything that starts with like hot, wet, you just wham, right to the spam. You know, anything that, you know, that's like from your wife ends up to the not to be opened at work. Anything that has Santorum in it, anything that has Frist in it, anything that says trend lots, right into the instinctively disbelieve folder.
Well, that is gone now. We still have Rick Santorum with us, who tells us we have found, get this, 500 WMDs since 2003.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Since 2003, coalition forces have recovered approximately 500 weapons, munitions, mm-hmm, which contain degraded mustard or sarin nerve agent?
I believe him, absolutely.
I think they found mustard.
In no way do I disbelieve that story. Here's the best part about this story, about the allegedly finding 500 weapons of mass destruction. The best part is, you remember how when we were... Look, I don't mean to make light of the situation, because clearly there's been many tragedies over there and tremendous loss of life. I will say this, however. Do you remember when we were... And we were still over at the Fisher... We were in there still over the old KOTK building. Do you remember as we were getting closer? This was back when the war was still happening, because apparently now everything is solved and the mission has been accomplished and everybody's just sitting around eating fruitcake. But do you remember when we were heading towards Baghdad and there was the circle of death that we were going to be passing? And it's like you want, like Britt Hume on television had, like for those spatially challenged viewers in the audience, he had like a map with Baghdad and literally like a big red circle around it with like skulls and crossbones. And the circle of death was, that was the point at which you would become vulnerable to these weapons of mass destruction, which were apparently everywhere. So it seems like on the news flowchart here, there's really only two possibilities. Possibility A, which is a story, is just a big load, and it's just a tremendous amount of bupkis that's come out of Karl Rove's orifice. Or B, that the weapons of mass destruction were there, and somehow we were able to find them, yet all of this time as we were marching into Baghdad, marching right up past the Iraqi Minister of Information, somehow the Iraqis themselves were not able to find them and or figure out how to use them. So I will let you discern for yourself which of those seems more likely.
And the fact that this was posted on Fox News.
Yes, well, I try not to be a cynic about these. Hello. Oh, look at me. My hands are over here. I didn't touch anything.
I touched nothing.
All right, that was Scotty.
Scotty, you touched the bottom row.
Quit touching things. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, the Senate has resoundingly defeated an amendment sponsored by Senators John Kerry and Russ Feingold that would have our troops leave Iraq by July of next year. The amendment was defeated 87-13 with a parade of no votes coming fast and furious on the Senate floor.
Mr. Allard, no. Ms. Stabenow. Ms. Stabenow. No.
Everybody just insert your Ferris Bueller joke
Mr.
now.
Mr. Dorgan.
Mr. Dorgan.
No. Mr. Schumer. Mr. Schumer. No.
All right, there you go. Thank you. Another gripping soundbite from Metro News Source. This is what? This is voting? I'm so confused because there's like 80 of these resolutions that have come out in the last... This is the...
John Kerry, Russ Feingold resolution. That our troops should leave Iraq by July.
Who could believe that it failed? This is the resolution just saying we ought to leave.
Right.
The best part is how they won't even... The Republicans are now calling this an open-ended American commitment, which is them trying to dampen the language of what George W. Bush said last week. And when he said... And then George W. Bush... We'll talk to Lisa Goddard about this when she calls in. Where George W. Bush actually said that we would stay in Iraq, quote... As long as Republicans controlled the White House and the Congress. Not till, like, the job is done. Not till, you know, we run out of troops. Just forever. As long as people keep voting GOP, we're just going to set up a pup tent and a Slurpee machine and just stay there. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, the new Iraqi government, this new one that's been in power since this morning, is considering a controversial new plan that would grant amnesty to insurgents who attack U.S. troops. Apparently, it was okay to do so before this. Connecticut Congressman John Larson said the proposal is not acceptable.
I mean, this is an outrage that they're even considering this, but we have to send a clear message to the Iraqi government and let the American public that the United States Congress is not going to stand by and watch these plans for amnesty unfold.
How dare you exercise the sovereignty that we gave you and told you could use, stupid Iraqis. All right. I have nothing. Look at me for follow-up. I have nothing. And frankly, I got to tell you, I've been burned out on stories that contain the phrase amnesty. So anything like that gets routed to the tired of it folder in my head, and I'm out of pithy observations.
And that is the end of democracy.
There's democracy in the box. By the way, I forgot to mention, so at Dante's last night, so Storm and the Balls were doing that. They were doing their final Dante's gig for the summer. And they do, you know, they do the two sets. So they do the first set, and then they break, and then they come back. Second set, she did that, because I was wearing my Cheap Trick shirt, so they busted out the, you know, the I Want You to Want Me, which is among their most stellar achievements. And she came out and she had the white evening gown on, and she totally did the Connie Chung. Because she starts it like straddling the piano, which I think is how she always does it. But it's like, for a whole, well, there's a whole generation scarred now where you just, the notion of, like, you will never again be able to see Michelle Pfeiffer clamber up on top of a Steinway. Because, I mean, like, in your head, it is now just fused with the horrible, bony Connie Chung just getting there, just sort of her loud atonal wailing. So Storm tossed out a little bit of the thanks for the memories, which everybody in the crowd knew. That's one of those things that linguists call a mem. It's one of those things that nobody knows. It's like a hundredth monkey kind of a thing. Nobody knows it, and then like the next day, bam, everybody knows it. It's like the internet has only accelerated and exacerbated this, by the way. Where there's one guy who has one video clip, one guy who has one kooky soundbite. You know, he tells somebody, they tell a third person, the next day all 5 billion people have downloaded it, and it's like the ringtone on their Moto Q. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, there's more to Washington, D.C. than politics. As you know, many people live in the city proper. It is a residence for many. And it was like history being made yesterday in Washington, D.C., as their city mayor, Anthony Williams, performed his eighth and final cannonball drive to kick off the swimming pool season. Yes, the mayor was full of jokes during his eighth and final cannonball performance.
I'm hoping that my legacy will be that my successor, whoever that successor is, will do an annual cannonball.
Okay. Imagine being the reporter who gets... he's what? The mayor of what?
Washington, D.C.
When did Marion Barry...
I thought he's been to prison several times.
As though those two things are somehow... as though you can't have a confluence of those two events. The last time I paid attention, there are certain places in this country, like in my head, Clint Eastwood is still the mayor of Carmel, because that's the last time I remember caring about Carmel in any way. He's an entire generation of people that will all, who's the mayor of Carmel? Clint Eastwood. And you just assume. So I thought that Marion Barry was still the mayor of D.C. All right. Well, whatever. All right. There you go.
In other top news, David Spade reportedly wants to get hitched to Heather Locklear. It's not over yet.
Get in line, friend.
I'm so in love, it's ridiculous, uh-huh. Spade told a friend. And the Life and Style Weekly magazine. What the heck is that? Life and Style Weekly? Ever hear of it?
Yeah. Life and Style, it's like a knockoff, like one of the cheaper ones.
Well, this is their big scoop featuring David Spade. Never in all my life did I think I'd be with someone so gorgeous and successful. She knows I'm going to ask. It's all about my timing. Spade's representative issued a no comment, but the magazine reports that the Just Shoot Me star, that's been off for like
a see above statement about Marion Barry still being the mayor of D.C.
He plans to pop the question this summer.
How long is that? Okay, let me just confess. I don't even know if the show's off the air. Maybe it's like I was thinking about the Drew Carey show the other day. I have no idea whether the Drew Carey, it doesn't really matter. You don't waste time and nub down your fingers by calling up to fill me in. I don't care. I'm just saying, the Drew Carey show falls into the same category as ER and whatever John Larroquette's last project was. I have no idea what the status is. No one does. It's sort of like Law and Order. I don't know how many Law and Order. Do you ever tune in TNT and just realize it's nothing? Law and Order is sort of, Law and Order is the queer eye to their Bravo. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Anytime, 23 hours a day, it's just that and then something with Ron Popeil trying to tell you something that squirts something onto something else. That's all it is.
His stuff does work, though.
David Spade?
No, Ron Popeil.
It completely does. I have the Pocket Fisherman as a child.
You know what? We've got a break.
Okay.
We can't keep Lisa waiting.
All right.
We can ask you about the mayor of Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Let's be sure to do that. Anything to keep Lisa got under the phone a little longer.
I think
drag out the call.
I think you have an awkward phone conversation.
I've completely started to become awkward because you've got inside my head. You've got me all psyched out about it now. All right. So, there's that big formal coming up, and it's the Rick Emerson Show. Coming up later on, we got CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy, Jen Lane from Barfly Magazine, Top 5, and a huge announcement about the exciting new direction of AM 970 Solid State Radio. I'm saying that all day. Don't go any back after this. No romance for me, my come on, baby. We'll be right back. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-7... Is this the Manny, or is this Kevin Federline? I can't tell.
If it's another guy, it's the Manny.
Oh, he's not wearing a hat and a velour jumpsuit, so it's probably not Kevin Federline. All right. And Brittany's just got that... Brittany's got that look that you see on the faces of especially untrained dogs sometimes. It's sort of equal parts sweet and deeply stupid. I gotta put this down. What magazine is this? In Touch. All right. Oh, yeah. By the way, I have to thank the good folks at Safeway for ambushing me last night. So there I am, attempting to leave clean, as they say. I'm in line. I got my bag of spinach. I've got my low-fat lunch meat, and I'm getting ready to make my purchases. And you know, the Inquirer, and I've completely come to grips with my Inquirer problem. It's there on Monday. I buy it. I bring it home. I make no apologies for it. I embrace it. I know exactly what I am. But the Globe is one of those. Because it's like once you know what it is? Here's the thing. The difference between, like, the Inquirer and the Globe, it's like, it's the difference, I think, between snorting heroin and then you start to use the needle. So I would guess. I mean, I don't know, but I'm speculating. But I think once you start to spike up, that's when you've crossed some sort of a boundary there inside yourself as a person, as a human being. So it is with me, because I'm now no longer just buying the Inquirer, I'm now buying the Globe. And the headline that finally got me was, Tim, what is the actual headline on the front? What does it say?
Laura walks out after showdown with George over cheating with Condi.
Yeah.
The first lady moves into this hotel, which looks like the Benson, but I'm sure it isn't.
It really is like they focus grouped something just for me. It's like they said, what can we do? There's this one guy in Portland who is teetering on the brink. He's on the edge. He's on the verge. He's prevaricating and equivocating about whether to buy the Globe. Let's, bam, push Condi. There I am. So, and I brought, and of course it's crap, of course, because there's nothing in it to speak of, it didn't stop me.
At least it's something they'll put in by color robe.
And tabloids are absurdly expensive, man, it's like $3.99. The only good thing about this particular issue of the Globe is it's got this picture of Condoleezza Rice in which she sort of looks like Emperor Palpatine from Avenger the Sith. Sort of a leaning forward kind of a, Kixie Habitses kind of a look on her face, so... I'm just saying. It's 503-733-2970. We've got more phone calls on the way later on. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Top five coming up as well. Later on, Double Geek Watch. Later
don't
on.
Test me.
I'm not testing nothing, baby.
Okay.
What else do I have to forward promote? Later
talking
on another.
Talking to Lisa, too.
Oh, your friend Lisa.
My friend Lisa.
They asked about the tattoo. We have to follow up. And then I got a whole bunch of email yesterday. There's no time to really get to it. What else? We have another reading from the Green Apron book. We'll get to that. We have
an announcement.
What else can I talk about? Hey, yes, a huge announcement about the exciting new direction of AM 970, Solid State Radio. More developments, things happening.
I think Laura, which
one? What else?
Blue Contact.
Thank you. All right, let's do this then. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson program. CNN radio correspondent in Washington, D.C., and woman about town, Lisa Goddard. How are you, Lisa?
Hey, Rick. You guys sound pretty ready for Friday. That's what I'm hearing over there.
Do we sound fatigued in some way or lackluster?
I'm sort of like, you sound ready for the week to just coast on out.
Well, it's been a bit of a week so far. It's like we're on the fourth day of the week, and I mean it's taken us 8 or 9 days I think to get to this point. You know what I mean?
I'm with you on that. It's exactly. I think today alone has been 4 days up here. Exactly.
Well, because I mean, and I'm not even in your shoes. You got that? I mean, I don't know. Probably every eight nine minutes there. You get this breaking news about Iraq, or there's some failed resolution, or there's some new hideous news. I mean, it's got to be like nonstop for you guys.
It's been wild today. There's been a lot of news, lots and lots, plenty of news.
So this. This resolution that I think we all knew was destined to fail because it had the word Kerry attached to it. It was just Kerry Feingold measure, the calling for, and it was just sort of a symbolic. Was this a symbolic measure calling for the U.S. troops to start bringing out a war? Did this one actually have the power of law? Had it gone through?
Yeah, there were two resolutions that Democrats offered today: the Kerry Feingold Boxer, and many other names attached proposal. Was going to have the force of law. It was going to mandate that the U.S. would have to withdraw combat troops from Iraq, all of them, by next July. And in the end, that got 13 votes, all of them Democrats, certainly the most liberal Democrats in Congress. But they united. They felt very strongly it's time to really do something and not just pass an opinion piece that the White House could just say, oh, that's nice, and throw away. But that got 13 votes. Then the second vote was a bit closer. That was a Democratic amendment that would start troop withdrawal this year. Didn't set any end date, just would start troop withdrawal this year. That got 39 votes, 6 Democrats voted against it. 1 Republican voted for it. That's Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island.
Hey, here's, and again, this has nothing to do with my own personal views or my own partisanship on this. Just politically speaking, I mean, I guess I don't want to criticize our elected officials for presumably voting their conscience, even in the flying in the face of public opinion. But do they not know how to read newspapers? Do they not ever go out and talk to the people they are representing? Because it does seem like public support for this war, which was high very briefly and then shaky for a long time, is, I mean, it's just not there. It's eroding like an ocean shelf. There's nothing left. People don't want this, and it is just staggering to me that the officials just march right in the face of this.
Yeah, that's right. There's no question the public really does not have confidence in what's happening in Iraq. And even after we had a positive week a couple weeks ago, now we've just seen more violence following the capture and following all of the gain of the 2 ministers that they passed in Iraq. But we've seen that they made some advances. The Iraqi government started being cemented after Zarqawi was killed. But now there's more violence. And you're right. I think the American public still is very wary, very nervous, and very frustrated with Iraq. And I think that's why you saw the 1 Republican, Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island. And I'm happy to say probably the first time his name has been mentioned on your air, I'm willing to bet. But the reason he's significant is he is up for re-election, and he is voting for the start of withdrawal as a Republican. There are 33 senators up for re-election. Not many of them really have close contests. And that's why you see the Republicans having an easy time siding with the president. And part of it is for conscious reasons as well. But you see someone, Lincoln Chafee, who's up for re-election. He's on the ropes. He's a Republican. And he is voting to start withdrawal this year.
Here's the thing about Iraq that I sort of think about a lot that it troubles me. Because let me be very upfront about this. I personally do not feel threatened by anybody in Iraq, any faction in Iraq, any part of the Iraqi government. I mean, they would basically have to cobble together a raft out of broken doors right now to get over here to do so. They don't even have functional toasters at this point. They have nothing. So
satellite dishes.
Yes, yes.
They do.
They do, and according to last week's story, they apparently have, I swear to God, donkeys laden with explosives. So
I believe it.
There's always that.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is this. I am not really worried about or don't feel threatened by the people in Iraq. Here's what I feel threatened by, though. I feel threatened by the fact that there are these two seemingly conflicting things that are going to come together in some sort of a confluence. One of them is that George W. Bush continues to say that we are not going to leave, and he said on Monday that as long as Republicans control the White House and the Congress, that we're going to stay in Iraq. And then, on the other hand, you've got the public who is continually... they're losing faith in it, insisting that something has to be done. You got this awful story where these 2 soldiers are killed and mutilated. So the public, on the one hand, they want something done. They want it over. They want it finished. But on the other hand, George Bush is like, we're not going to leave. So it seems like the only thing that leaves on the table is just some sort of hideous, drastic, overly aggressive action against them that's just going to trigger some awful chain reaction. You know what I mean? It's going to lead to something quick and fast and way out of proportion.
Well, I think that's why you ended up with the votes you had today in the Senate. The Kerry Amendment saying that we need to withdraw from the middle of next year, while most Americans are very frustrated with Iraq, I think when you look at opinion polls and you ask, should the U.S. pull out within a year, you'd have a divided country on that. I don't think there's a clear opinion there. And I think that's what happened in the Senate. I think a lot of people realize we're there and it is a very bad situation. But if we pulled out, there is a very good chance it could get worse. Now, Democrats also argue there's a chance it could get better. Maybe the Iraqis would step up and gain more responsibility, and perhaps the terrorists from foreign countries would leave and follow the U.S. elsewhere. But there is a strong argument to be made that says John McCain and others saying, no, the U.S. cannot leave now. If we leave, there's a possibility of civil war. There's a possibility of insurgents taking over, something like we've seen in Somalia. So I think that's why you did not see the support for the Kerry Amendment, because people just don't think it's realistic. We certainly don't know within a year if the U.S. will be able to pull out or not.
Well, I'm not saying we ought to stay and fix everything, because I don't know that we can. On the other hand, saying that we should leave and let it fix itself is a whole lot like saying you ought to just take the cops out of my neighborhood and hope the crack house next door goes away. It's not really going to happen. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, what are you guys, are you covering this WMD, these alleged weapons of mass destruction that they're...
Yes.
Somebody said they were 20 years old. Somebody said they were brand new. Somebody, I don't even know what the deal is.
Yeah, I think what they're saying, this is a report that was declassified by the Pentagon at the request of some Republican congressmen who saw classified versions of it. The Pentagon declassified parts of it and allowed them to leak it to the public, or allowed them to announce yesterday what was in the report. And in the report, it said that after the U.S. got into Iraq, our military and the coalition found some 500 canisters and various devices containing biological weapons, including sarin gas and mustard gas. But it's not clear yet exactly what condition those different weapons were in or how old they were. We knew that Saddam Hussein had them at the time of the first Gulf War. It's not clear if they're from that time, if he kept them around, or if they were processed later, which leads to the whole Bush argument that there was active pursuit, active facilities making weapons of mass destruction when we entered Iraq. And so the Republicans here are saying, look, here's more evidence. There were weapons of mass destruction there, and we had every reason to invade Iraq after all.
I sense the liver-spotted hands of Karl Rove all over this.
It's definitely, I need to see a lot more details about this. I to be honest, I have not read the report myself. I know much of it is still classified, and they're asking for all those portions to be released. They haven't been. So I think that they expected this to be a bombshell, literally, I guess, but figuratively. And the press corps is certainly dubious of it. We're reporting it, but there are a lot more details to find out about exactly what the U.S. found in Iraq.
Well, Lisa Goddard, we will let your cynicism and skepticism be our guide.
Oh, geez.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your day, Lisa. We will talk to you soon.
All right, you too.
All right, there you go. CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard on the Hill. There you go. All right, are you happy now? I just haven't sweated through the whole goddamn interview. All right.
She was a little too chatty at the beginning. I think word had circulated.
Okay.
It was like after you've had like a weird makeout session with someone that you don't know what to say.
Okay, which is not the case. Let's stop and clarify this right now. In no way.
Did you talk way too long about the weather? That was kind of what I thought.
There was a whole lot of,
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a lot.
Did you ever think about escalators?
Uh-huh.
They just keep going around. Yeah, all right.
Like all that stuff about how we seem like we're ready for Friday.
What would happen on Saturday?
This is your fault, by the way. I'm blaming you for this. Because you're
very
the
short
one.
Time, she's going to be the next Pat Sink.
Seriously, Lisa's just going to go on the pile of discarded CNN anchors who were scared away by their love for me in this program.
Yeah.
Okay, here's Jim Riley.
Oh, did you see that picture?
I feel all wooden and stiff now. I feel all askew. And I did not say nude. I was talking. The exciting.
Oh, about the new direction?
The exciting new direction. Of the exciting new direction is what I was saying. Right as Sarah threw it to Lisa Goddard's phone call. Todd the Corpse, who says, I know what you're thinking about. Ha, ha, ha. Here's Tim Riley. Just do some news. I'm just going to stand here for a minute.
All righty. Well, coming up a little bit after 1 o'clock, Portland Mayor Harry Potter will announce the city's new permanent police chief. It might not be Rosie Sizer, but it might be. So if you applied, it could be you. So I will let you know who becomes the new police chief.
Be listening.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a red light from a beer ad that a bartender suspected was a bomb when he saw it blinking on the wall forced 45 people to be evacuated from a resort hotel in Indiana. How big of a resort in Indiana could it be? People go there for vacation and kick up their heels to Indiana.
Andy, you'll love our new spark.
Apparently, this is from a Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Where would you be coming from that Indiana would be the resort of your choice?
West Virginia?
West Virginia, we're just living in a clapboard house and being molested every day. Is that it? Let's go to Indiana. It'll be like Club Med. Just get me out of here.
Well, this whole hoopla was caused by a Pabst Blue Ribbon sign that was sectioned cup to the window at the Sam Snead restaurant at this resort.
Sam Snead?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whenever you say, I just picture the guy going into the resort with those big swinging, like, you know, barroom doors and whatnot. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. What are these phone calls about? Why are you calling?
Think there's a talk show or something?
Let's see. Hi, Wes, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I be of assistance to you today, sir,
yes,
madam?
Yes, Rick.
Hi.
I heard you like the Globe now. Is that?
I don't like... My only comment is that I could... Look, I... It is a slow degradation of my tabloid taste. That is true, because Sarah and I, see, and Sarah and I have a weird codependence here, where we sort of read the tabloids together, and it's like, you know what it is? It's like being with another junkie, or somebody who shares, like, the same weird fetish that you do or something, where it's like, it is implicit that you will not pass judgment on one another. Because you understand that what you do may be viewed by society as shameful, but you understand that it's what you feel in your heart, and it's a thing that you feel compelled to do, and you are not gonna look at each other askance for that behavior. So
I don't know. I may be the pariah for your group then, because I'm a bigger fan of the Weekly World News.
Well, man, see, the Weekly World News exists in its own. No one will look at you weirdly, really, in any way for reading the Weekly World News. Because everybody knows it's a goof, it's a gag. But it's like you read the Globe, and it exists in this weird netherworld between. See, like, because the Inquirer, or so I tell myself, is almost a respectable newspaper now. I've talked about this many, many times. I can cite examples if you like. The Inquirer, they were the first newspaper to talk about the Bruno Mali shoes and the OJ case. They broke that. They broke most of the big, solid, concrete leads in the JonBenet Ramsey case. They had, wasn't there something else? Some Chandra Levy thing?
Yeah.
Well, whatever. There's some other thing. The Inquirer is also the. Listen to me now. The Inquirer. I'm not an addict! The Inquirer is actually the least sued newspaper of their size in America. That is what they call in journalistic circles a checkable fact, my friend. So, I'm just saying. The Globe, though, like, I'm no longer ashamed when I buy the Inquirer. Like, I buy it and I put it down on the countertop with my sarsaparilla and I say, ring me up, good sir. The Globe, though, I was, like, hiding it underneath the spinach and, you know, like, face down and whatnot. Which it doesn't help you anyway because you put it face down on the bag is a big-ass Franklin Mint thing with an eagle on a plate. You know, and that's no roadmap to social respectability. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. All right, I gotta go.
Fair enough. I hope everything worked out for you guys.
But what the hell does that mean?
I'm just glad you're back on the radio. That's all I'm saying.
Oh. Wait, oh no, that's a statement that doesn't come out unprompted. What do you mean you hope everything worked? What do you know that we don't?
Nothing.
Who do you work for?
Absolutely nothing.
Is this Les Moonves?
I work for a bank.
Okay. All right, thank you, Wes, if that is indeed your real name. Okay.
I hope everything works out for him at the bank. Every time I go in, there are different tellers. Or no tellers at all.
Jesus. I hope everything works out well for Wes and that tumor that he's got. All right, here's Tim Riley, I guess.
Bird flu bulletin board. The bird flu likely spread among family members of an Indonesian cluster. Huh? Apparently, these are vacationing Indonesians who started the bird flu. The World Health Organization concluded that human-to-human transmission likely occurred among seven relatives who died from the bird flu. Good for them.
At an Indiana resort.
No, this is an Indonesian resort.
Okay.
Or maybe it's a misprint. Is it? Maybe it is from India.
What's the difference between I thought Indonesia was gone. Isn't it the tsunami destroyed that whole?
It did, but
there's nothing left.
It did, but it's back.
The resort there is just the one that has fewer cockroaches and weevils.
Well, they said this family cluster's first case was probably affected by sick birds and spread the disease to six family members living on a remote island. One of these cases, a boy, then likely infected his father, then the mother, then the aunt, then the aunt.
I was to understand, and this is Ed McCarthy from CNN Radio Atlanta, with whom I do not have an awkward sexual tension, by the way. Mm. No, I don't. I'm just saying, I'm looking forward to talking to Ed later on today because it'll be, you know, when I talk to Ed at 1:30.
I thought there was speculation of that.
No, despite what you and Wes would have people believe, there was no, there's nothing. I'm saying when I talk to Ed later on today, it will be like a big psychic unclenching.
No, you know what you're going to do? You're going to ask him if he had heard any rumors about you and Laura.
I didn't, okay. Anyway, Ed McCarthy, who was our point man on the avian flu, he was basically making it literally like you had to wring the chicken out into some sort of an open sore on your body. Literally, you had to get like a bird and you had to shove it into some sort of exposed place. That was like the only way you were going to be able to get it. So I don't know what's going on in Indonesia that it's getting from a chicken to a person and then from a person to like eight other people, all of whom are related to each other. I don't know how they roll over there, but it does seem like it raises more questions than it answers. Questions that I don't wish to have the resolution to. Let's get to Ron. Ron, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I be of assistance to you?
Rick, so glad you're back on the air.
Thank you, sir.
Is your mystery sound
from the
game of life?
No, it is not. Now, let me ask you this. When you called up and asked this question, did you really think you had it correct? Or, in other words, how confident are you? I'm not trying to mock your guess. I'm just saying...
I was quite confident.
So, like, on a classic... On the classic 1 to 10 scale, I wonder how many man hours in this city have been wasted by people on hold to guess at the mystery sound with something that is either wildly inaccurate or something that has already been dismissed hundreds of times on this program as being so.
I'm wasting my company's money, though.
Well, okay, there you go. So as long as the man is paying and not you. So on the classic 1 to 10 scale, before I just dashed your hopes, how confident were you in that guess?
Oh, realistically, 6.5.
Yeah, it was way too high. No, it's... Well, let's listen right now, shall we? Here's, ladies and gentlemen, here's the mystery sound. I didn't think life had a wheel. I thought life was dice.
No, there's a wheel with the little game pieces and all that good stuff.
Enough people have guessed the life wheel by now, Rick.
No one's guessed the life wheel.
Yes.
No, people guessed the puppet, the sorry thing.
No, about four or five people have guessed the life wheel.
Yep. Where was I?
I agree. You were here.
Okay.
Where were you? Anyway, I'm sure things will work out quite well for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Rick. I got it.
All right.
The life wheel. Every other person guessed the life wheel. Do you just not listen?
Not really. I don't. It's like that's the other filter in my head. Here's what it is. Rick, I'm calling about the mystery sound. And in my head, I'm just like, mm-hmm. No, that's mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, that's great.
And then I just hang up. Here, I should give this to you, Tim. That's the Geekwatch. There you go.
Oh, we got a couple of them.
Here's an email. Rick, do you know what's great about your show? Says Matt. Rick, you know what's great about your show? Not only does newsman Riley call our esteemed mayor Tom Potter Harry Potter, but nobody on your show knows enough to correct him. That is neither factual news nor even intelligent commentary. Keep up the great work. There you go. That's on our way to a 50 share. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Don't forget, coming up later on, we have an exciting announcement about the future developments and evolution of this station. Let's put it that way to avoid any... Was she on hold when I said that? When I was talking about we're going to talk about the exciting new direction.
Oh, yeah.
When I suppose if one runs those words together quickly enough inside one's head, it may conceivably sound like something else, which is altogether blue. Well, what are you going to do?
It sounds more like a mission statement.
It should just have an audio mission statement that plays in the lobby. Come in and learn about our exciting new direction.
No, that has to be Solid State Radio, a new direction.
When people push a button for the doorbell to get in.
That's our theme.
Okay. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Here's Tim Riley at the city desk.
Jackson County DA Mark Huddleston moved today to dismiss the manslaughter case against a trail woman who confessed to killing her husband with an axe. The decision comes weeks after the Oregon Supreme Court overturned Don Ellen Robin Becker's 2001 conviction because detectives failed to advise her of her Miranda rights.
How many names is that? How many names does she have?
1, 2, 3, 4.
All right, there you go. Mm.
She's a liberated woman.
Well, no, because 2 is serial killer, and then 3 is... I mean, I'm saying if you have two...
It has a hyphen.
If you have two, well, see, then I don't know what that means then. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, Mark David Chapman, Henry Lee Lucas...
Right. Apparently, Robel Baker had claimed self-defense, telling police she killed Jack Baker after he threatened her with the axe as she attempted to leave her home in January 1997. She wrestled the axe from him and hit him over the head with it. She told detectives she was worried he'd be mad at her, so she continued to whack him over the head with the axe.
She then I don't want you to be displeased with me, honey. I better bludgeon you several hundred more times to assuage any irritation you may feel.
I was taught to get her done. I saw it on a bumper sticker.
Anything worth doing, it's worth doing right and overdoing.
She then placed the body in a sleeping bag and buried it in the yard. No family member reported seeing him, and Robel Baker told her landlord that her husband left her. The skeletal remains were found in 2000 by a neighbor who was clearing away blackberry bushes.
Oh. Country people are the salt of the earth, friends. They are the common clay of the New West and the moral fiber which holds this disparate country together. I love any story that contains axe or skeletal remains. Let's see. Yeah, here's Todd the corpse. Wait, where's the whole, here's Todd the...
Come on!
Rick, for the love of God! Here's the great thing about Todd, by the way, is his email... Todd the corpse, and many people have asked why he's called Todd the corpse. Long story, I should answer that right
now. He died and came back to life.
No, that was...
Oh, that was Loretta Lynn.
Yes.
According to the Inquirer.
Yes.
I got the two...
And then she raised Conway Twitty from the dead. Well, moving on. We'll get back to that later, I guess. Todd is a longtime listener of this program, and he got the name Todd the Corpse because he was in the short film Joni DeRosa edited. He played a corpse. He played a dead body, and so he became Todd the Corpse, blah, 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 blah. So he's kind of a good friend of the show. But he's a very religious man, and I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. He teaches Sunday school, to children. I know he and his wife frequently attend service. He has spoken to me sincerely and glowingly and in a non-patronizing way about his salvation through the healing blood of the Lamb, Jesus Christ, etc.
Did it work?
Well, I guess we'll find out someday. But the best thing about this is, at the longer the mystery sound thing has gone unsolved, his emails are just getting angrier and like the way that Christian people can snap, like Christian people snap like no one else. There really isn't any snapping like a godly snapping. And I believe he is teetering right now on the knife edge of some sort of mental and emotional collapse about the mystery sound. Because Todd's the one who confessed to dreaming the Starbucks song. And I believe now when he dreams, the Starbucks song is now entwined with the mystery sound in his dreams. Anyway, this is, "Oh, for the love of God, Rick," all caps. "Like Sarah said, and every other guy has said, yes, they have already guessed Life Spinner. And every single time someone guesses the Life Spinner, you say, quote, 'Life doesn't have the spinner, it has the popper thing,' end quote. Then everyone has to correct you and tell you it was the game Trouble with the Pop-O-Matic bubble. Please stop this. You have found new and interesting ways to make my soul cry at the thought of this damnable mystery sound. Thank you, goodbye. I'm Todd."
That is so true.
It really is true. All right.
Tim has some exciting geek news.
Do we? Well, we have no time to do it, sadly. Okay. So do we have to break here?
I guess so.
All right, well, let's take an exciting look at what's coming up, shall we? On cockfighting? I don't even understand what that... Well, whatever. Okay.
That's from yesterday.
Well, okay. Here's what we got coming up.
You can do it.
We'll be going. Oh, there's all this pressure now. It's like when I had to talk to Lisa. You're really pretty. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy, with whom I have a strong masculine but heterosexual relationship, we'll be talking...
You should ask if he was a masculine.
Stop! I'm never going to get this done now. You're going to ruin my guarantees by forward promoting. Oh, no, they'll never give me mornings now. No! All right, and top five coming up. Week in Geek. Stuff. Things. Pop culture references. More teasing! Crap.